Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Okay, tonight we're starting a new cycle, and it's controversial topic cycle. If anybody's interested, we have some flyers out in the back. There's some topics that we're going to be covering that you don't hear normally in meetings. One of the topics is how to make amends to somebody you got romantically involved with by accident in AA, you know, how to do that in the appropriate way. There's just a whole bunch of things. Tonight is the Alcoholics Anonymous member and painkiller medication. We're going to be talking about that. Now, our friend Ray C., who's got a lot of experience with that, is going to be coming and joining us very soon. I was hoping to get our friend Kevin K. to share on it. I mean, he probably would be the guy who I'm the most impressed with. He was on painkiller medication for a long time. He'd been run over by a truck and had so many surgeries, it was unbelievable. And he got through the other end with that. Now, I know that everybody in here understands the danger with painkiller medication. How many people have you seen relapse because they got a prescription for their backache or something? I mean, it happens a lot. I'm going to talk from my own experience, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what I believe happens with us, because I think it's important. Our sobriety sometimes is our life. Sometimes when we lose our sobriety, we literally lose our life because we can't make it back here. It's just not, we aren't able to develop the renewed enthusiasm to come back in here and start over, and we don't make it. We see that happening a lot. What I believe is, I believe that there are times when we need to take these medications. I want to tell you a story that happened. I'll tell you a couple of them, but one of them happened. I think I had about 3 years sober. And what happened was all of a sudden I started to get a gut ache that was just absolutely brutal. And it got worse as the night went on. And I slowly started to realize I need to get to a hospital. I think my appendix is about to blow up. And that's exactly what it was. I had appendicitis and got to the hospital just in time before it went. Now, when I got to the hospital, they came at me with some morphine because they were getting me ready for the operation. So what they do is they calm you down. They'll give you an IV drip or whatever, just to calm you down. Well, they came at me with the morphine needle. And I remember looking over at Mary Beth and saying, "Mary Beth, get me a bucket." And she's like, "What for?" They hit me with the morphine. All of a sudden, whoa! You know, I mean, it's a reaction that I have because I've got some experience with opiate drugs, believe it or not. And I know what's coming, you know, so get the bucket. And I got sick, and then I was cool. They prepped me, they took me up, and they wheeled me in for the operation, and I had my appendix taken out. Now, you know, the doctor was kind of explaining, I'm okay with anything, you know, after they've got me medded up, but he's explaining things, and you know, and he goes, we're gonna use a new procedure. It's laparoscopic. You know, we're not gonna gut you like a pig. We're just gonna a couple little holes, and we're gonna go in. Everything should be fine." So I'm like, "Okay, that's great." He goes, "You'll be up and around in a day or two. Back to work in 3 days." Okay, fine. I remember coming to in the recovery room, realizing something really, really wrong must have happened because I was not okay. What had happened was my lung had collapsed. I had gotten pleurisy. I had developed pneumonia. You know, the worst place in the world to be sick is a hospital. I think we all know that. There's more mutant genes running around on floors in those places. I'm telling you, you know. It's deadly. You get staph and all these crazy infections just waiting to jump on your ass. You know? So if you're like paranoid of hospitals, I hope you weren't listening. But anyway. Anyway, so I wake up on this recovery bed, and something is horribly wrong. And they've been hitting me up, because I'm in a lot of pain, they've been hitting me up with a lot of morphine. So about a day goes by, and they're ready to release me. Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of problems, but I'm okay. Well, the reason I'm okay is I'm on tons of morphine. So they release me, and I go home. Now, meanwhile, someone had come in who was in AA. I got a lot of visitors from AA at this period of time. And this guy came in and said, listen, Chris, you know, take it from me. You don't want to take any of that. You don't want to go home with any of those really serious prescriptions. You know, you'll relapse. So let me tell you what I would do. I would get a prescription for Dolobid. And I go, okay. And he goes, it's non-narcotic, non-habit-forming painkiller, and I've got some experience. I've used it, and I was fine. So when the surgeon came in, I go, Doc, I want Dolobid, because he's about to write me some Percocet prescription. I go, no. I'm an alcoholic. I want Dolobid. And he looked at me really funny, and he goes, okay. You know, and he wrote me out a prescription for Dolobid, and he handed it to me, and I went home. And I was okay. How long was I okay, Mary? That's about 4 or 6 hours, something like that. All of a sudden, the morphine started to wear off. And I realized that these Dolobids were non-narcotic. They were non-habit-forming, and they were also non-effective. And all of a sudden, I started going into some serious-ass pain. I built a big mound on my bed with every piece of clothes I had. I made a big molehill. And I laid over it like this because it was the only position I could be in that was even close to tolerable. You know, and Mary Beth comes in and I'm lying on top of a molehill going, whoa! And so she goes, I think we should go back to the hospital. I go back to the hospital. I walk in. My surgeon is still there. And I remember, I am in such pain. I am so doubled up in pain with this pleurisy and the collapsed lung and everything that I'm like this and I can barely move. And he goes, lie down on the table. I want to examine you. I go, I can't lie down. And he goes, lie down on the table. So I go, okay, I'll try. Well, I start to lie down on the table. All of a sudden, I scream. I'm like, ah! I mean, just a horrible pain, right? The surgeon looks at me and takes off, and I never see him again. He's gone. They wheel in this thing called a morphine pump. Anybody ever seen the morphine pump with the big friggin' bellows and a button that they give you and everything? Well, they wheel it in and they hook me up to this morphine pump and they start pumping me full of morphine so that I can heal. Now, being an alcoholic, I named the pump. You know what I mean? I lovingly dubbed my morphine pump Fred, you know, and people would come in and I would say, hey, say hi to Fred while I'm clicking the button, you know? I mean, oh man. Now, the point I want to make with this story is that we can be too careful. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, we need to be chicken shit careful when we take painkiller medication. We just do. Because it'll get us. It's gotten better people than me. But we can also be stupid and not take the stuff that we actually really need. What happens when your body tries to heal from pleurisy or a collapsed lung is you're in so much pain, you're doubling over and you're causing more damage. You're not allowing anything to heal. You need to become relaxed. You need to be opiated out. You just do for the healing to take place. Now, one of the things that I've learned is you're better off not being your own pharmacist. Let's say you have to leave the hospital with a prescription of Percocet. You just have to. It's a good idea to have your drug advocate with you, your watchdog person, okay? Somebody that will divvy them out to you and keep the bottle under lock and key or hidden or whatever. And give them to you as needed, not as wanted. You know, because so often as alcoholics, we misread the label. take as wanted. You know? Anybody ever take their prescription as wanted? Oh, man. I remember one time down in Florida, this is a long time before I even considered my drinking and drugging a problem. I had a back spasm or whatever and went in to the hospital and they gave me Tylenol with codeines and muscle relaxers. I literally ate both bottles about 2 hours after I got home. I went into a conscious dream state. You know, I was out of my mind. But that's how I take painkiller medication. And then I'll wake up the next day, you know, oh no, I can't refill this till next month. You know what I mean? It's a bad scene. So with the Percocets and stuff like that, it's a very, very good idea to give them to somebody who will watch them for you. Try not to give them to another drug addict to watch them for you. You know, try to give them to somebody that's rational and that you can kind of count on. Because I think that's important. Powerlessness is powerlessness. If we're a drug addict and an alcoholic or vice versa or whatever, once this medication or this sedative effect is in your bloodstream, if you truly are an addict or an alcoholic, you're powerless over where you will let it take you. You're powerless. Powerlessness is powerlessness. When we look at step one, we admit that we're powerless over alcohol, or we admit we're powerless over drugs. What powerless means is you can't say, I'll just follow the prescription. If you're powerless, you're powerless. You don't have the ability to do that, unfortunately. So don't let your ego or yourself talk you into being in control of something that's not controllable. So that's an example of being a little too careful. Another example of being a little too careful. Here I am. I'm at work. This is about 1995 or 96. Nothing is more important to me than my sobriety back in those days. I mean, I was an evangelist in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, more so even than today. And nothing was more important than my sobriety. So I'm jumping off the back of a pickup truck, one of those liftgate pickup trucks, and my wedding ring catches. And unfortunately, the ground was further away than I could stretch with my arm. So what happened was it stripped my finger off. My wedding ring literally pulled my finger off. Now, that'll get your attention. You know what I mean? Something like that. Oh, man. It was pumping like a garden hose. And I remember running into my boss's office and it's squirting on him and on the walls. And he's like, "Wah!" You know, and, one of the excavators that worked for us, I was in charge of some subcontractors, was an ex Navy SEAL. This guy was the real deal, ex SEAL. And he just calmed me down. He got me laid down on the table. Just the way he talked to me. Just calmed me right down. I mean, you obviously could tell that this guy had seen a lot of battle wounds and stuff like that. And he just knew what to do. He got the white cloth and he stopped the bleeding in my hand and he was talking to me while the ambulance was on the way there. Now, I go into the hospital and I'm in the hospital and they put me in a trauma room and I'm still bandaged up and I'm hanging on to my hand like this, you know, and it's a very, very busy day at the trauma room. This is over in New Brunswick. And people are not paying attention to me. 1 hour goes by. 2 hours go by. Now, I'm a guitar player, so I know that there's a certain amount of time I'm going to need to get my finger back on. I just do, because I'm a jazz guitar player. You know what I mean? And this is my left hand. So nobody's coming. Nobody's even coming into my room. So I decide I'm going to start screaming like a sumbitch. That'll get somebody's attention. So I said, "Aah!" You know, pretty soon a doctor walks by, comes in and goes, what, and grabs the nurse on duty. "What the hell's the matter with you?" You know, he goes and he gets a local. He goes, "Am I the only person right here that can give a local?" And starts yelling at this nurse. He comes and he hits my hand up with a local anesthetic and I'm good. You know, all of a sudden now I don't have any pain. They get me in later. Finally, the hand surgeon shows up. They wheel me in and put me on the gurney. And they've got a drip in me, Valium or something. They've got to calm you down. Even when they just give you locals, they got to mellow you down, you know. So I'm okay. I'm on the gurney, and they got the curtain in the way, so as not to let me see what the hell they're doing. But the guy's operating on my finger. And, you know, I get out of there. I get up, and I'm ready to go. They're going to let me out that night, and I'm feeling pretty good. So they give me some Percocets and a prescription for Percocets. Now, I took the one Percocet. I think I took one more the next day, and then did it with Tylenol and Advil because I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know how I did it for the next month? I did it like this. Okay. Now, today, I got to tell you, today, I would say I want the Percocets. My wife gets them. She'll give me, you know, 2 in the morning, 2 at night, whatever. But I want them, you know, because I really think that I was foolish going through all that pain. Now, again, we've got to be really, really careful. But because I was on no pain killer medication, let me tell you the attitude I had toward my hand. And this is a lesson I learned that I use with my sponsees today. But this is what happened. I wouldn't even look at my hand. It was such a bad injury that I didn't even acknowledge it. And I wouldn't look at my hand. And that was kind of hard because once a day I would have to do what was called Dibramol. You know what that is? That's like ripping the scab off so a new one can come on. And it was a very unpleasant task. But you needed to do that to keep the circulation going so that the thing wouldn't get gangrenous, which it eventually did, unfortunately. But anyway, I was loath to even acknowledge the injury. I always had it wrapped and in a sling, and I wasn't. And I go into the doctor's office. He's doing a follow-up visit a couple of weeks out. And he sees me like this. And he pulls my hand down. He's looking at my hand. And he sees me. I'm not even looking at it. Right? And he notices what's going on. He notices that I'm not with my hand. And he grabs my head. And he grabs my hand. And he shoves my hand in my face and says, God damn it, you gotta look at this. You gotta look at this. You gotta deal with this. You're the one that's gonna have to be taking care of this, you moron. And he starts yelling at me, like, you know, making me feel small. Remember that? Oh man. And I'm like, I'm traumatized. I'm like, oh, like looking at my hand. That's what I do with my sponsees on step one now. Look at your life! Look at your life! It's pathetic! If you don't acknowledge how bad it is, you're not gonna recover. You know, so it was a great lesson to learn. Anyway, from that moment on, I realized I have to deal with this. I have to be there with my hand. And I think by that time the damage had been done and they had to chop it off anyway, but it was still a lesson, I guess, worth learning. God, that guy was rough. No bedside manner at all. Oh man. Anyway, I've had over the course of the years, I've had other injuries. I've had some back issues. It goes on and on and on. And I've had to have serious medication, serious painkiller medication. Now, again, this is not something to take lightly, not at all to take lightly. As a matter of fact, you always need to be honest with your sponsor or somebody very, very close to you what you're doing, how much you're taking, where is it, who's got it, who's given it to you. You need to stay in constant communication with this stuff. I've done as much as go to doctors with sponsees. And hospitals with sponsees, been there for them getting these medications because it's so scary for them to even have these things in their pocket. You know, again, what happens sometimes is once these medications are in our body, we've got little or no control over the amount that we take. We can get caught up in the phenomenon of craving, which can lead us to drinking. You know, it can lead us to a lot of problems. Now, I don't see Ray. Ray was going to show up around 8:30 or so. So without Ray here, I'm looking around and I want to pick somebody who can share on this topic and do it some kind of adequate job on it. And I'm looking over at my buddy Sean, who's probably hoping I won't call on him. Sean, would you come up and share a little bit about this topic with us? Thank you, Sean.
Sean, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. What is the topic?
Painkiller medications and the alcohol.
Oh, all right. Well, I've been really lucky since in the 4 years I've been sober, cleaned up now, that I haven't had any injuries, so I haven't had to deal with that stuff. You know, but I—that would be.
How about the problems you
had? Yeah, I've had huge problems with that stuff. I've never been able to safely use that in any form. I mean, the phenomenon of craving does develop in me as soon as I take any kind of narcotic painkiller. Because it always gets back to, you know, what I like to do the most, which is narcotic. And a lot of my, if you want to call them relapses, whatever, where I would leave a period of sobriety and go back out on runs, were always precedented by painkillers. Whether a doctor prescribed them for, you know, some pain, whether it was real or fancied, usually fancied. And I would start eating these things. And you know, a normal person, if you told them, I know you're not lying when you say you could eat a full script in 2 hours, because there's no doubt that I could not do that. And you just go to another doctor to fill it or get a new one. But there was a time I was spending a lot of money scamming doctors. You know, I guess I had the money to burn, but boy, it was a lot of effort. It was just like copping on the street, going to doctors and lying and getting shot down by some. And but I have been in as bad a state from prescription drugs as I've been on street drugs. You know, a doctor once prescribed me morphine for back pain that I didn't have, because I would go back to him and say, this isn't strong enough. But I'm thinking of years ago, I had a similar thing with an injury. And I tried to separate myself from half of my body that had injuries from drug use. And I went through the same thing. It's funny you even bring that up, because the doctor used to yell at me because I wasn't taking care of the stuff, or I was picking at it, because I wasn't supposed to scratch these wounds, but I was under the influence of narcotics, so I was scratching constantly and pulling the stitches out. And the guy would just get mad at me. And, you know, he would get mad because he cared. But there was a weird thing going on where I didn't want to acknowledge what was going on there. And I think I left that hospital that time in worse state than I went in, because they left me and I was on, what was I on in there? They had me on everything. They had me on methadone to try and keep me from going and withdraw from the dope, but also they had me, I had everything going on there. I had the morphine drip machine, I had that OxyContin stuff, you know. And there were people from the program coming up to visit me that would tell me later they were up there, and I don't remember them being there because I was in a constant state of numbness. I don't remember that whole time. It's probably a good thing, but you know, right now where I'm at today, I've been offered one prescription for a cough medicine. Now, there was a time where I would take that and I would just drink that as soon as it was filled. I would drink that entire bottle, and I would start looking for your bottle and, you know, going into your bathroom and your medicine cabinet and all that crap. And I don't know. I've got to believe that God's kept me in this spot, because maybe up until this point, that wouldn't have been a good thing if I had painkillers. But I would really hope that with the people, you know, my friends in this fellowship, that I would do the right thing and give them the bottle, because I just can't have it, because I won't take just two, because it won't do anything. If I see those pills and those certain names, I will associate that with getting high. And I know two doesn't get me where I need to go. I need to at least triple that dose. And I know a friend of mine now, he just had some hip surgery, and he's going through that. And I know that can't be a pleasant place to be. I mean, he's doing the right thing, but still, you've put this substance into your body that you've been delivered from, that you've been awakened out of that state of being the walking dead, you know, asleep, thinking you're awake. And to have serious surgery where you really have to have that stuff to take that part of your mind away from the pain. But he's doing the right thing by it. He's told everybody. He's got people holding his prescriptions, and that's what I would hope I would do. You know, I really don't. Chris, I love laughing with you. You have a sense of humor about that past, and you know, I don't want to sound like a sense of humor, but I don't have any funny stories about that part of my life. I really don't. You know, there's not, you know, I wish I had them. I mean, because if it came to me having to, you know, God forbid, tell a drunkalog or a drug-a-log, God, you know, thank God I don't need to do that. Because we talk about the steps and what's happened through the steps. I'd put you all asleep. And actually, I wouldn't even bring it up, because there's just no fun in that. There was no fun. I just used alone. I was just a... you know, a using machine, you know, like a predator, a monster, you know, with blinders on. And I could only look in one direction, and that was for what I was going for. And not a lot of fun happened on the way. And that happened at an early age for me, where the party was over. I'll tell you, at 14, the party was over. There was no party. It was done. And, you know, that's why, you know, this is how I am today. But anything good and any fun that's happened has been a result of the gifts that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, you know. And that's been a process for me, too, is getting, you know, getting back to that life is good, because it was so unpleasant for so long. I got conditioned to believe that life is just unpleasant. So I'm in a process of learning it's not the case, and you know, you got to get out there and make some things happen. You know, God's not going to just drop everything into my lap. But you know, the miracle is I recovered physically from that period of time. I think that was in 2000, and I couldn't walk, and I couldn't use my hands, and you know, it was a scary thing, because I I'm a craftsman for a living, and I couldn't work, and I didn't know what to do. You know, forget about being a musician. I couldn't play anymore, and but I couldn't earn a living. I didn't know what I was going to do. I couldn't even take a cap off of a bottle, or I couldn't button a shirt or do anything. I was like crippled up, scared to death, and I had, you know, these top doctors tell me you're you know, in a nice way, they said, you're done. You're never going to regain the movement in your dexterity. And I don't know, man. I beat the odds. It wasn't anything I did. Let me tell you, I did not, like, work hard at rehabbing myself. You know, I just continued to use, if you want to know the truth. That's how much I appreciated my gift from God. But I didn't know any other way. I couldn't see out of that box, man. It was just not a good thing. So where anybody who had some sense of sanity or some small degree of being rational, that experience would have been one of the ones that we have that would sober you up for the rest of your life. Because I don't care what happens, but I don't ever want to go back there. Not for me. I just kept on rolling. And actually, things got worse past that, if that's possible. They did. They got worse. But, I tell you, I don't take cold medicine, so maybe I'm the other extreme. You know, maybe I need to lighten up on that, but I'll suffer through a cold because it's just, you know, if you just get rest and you eat right and you continue to, take care of your body, the cold ain't going to kill you. But I don't take cold medicine. I don't do any of that stuff. I'll take some Advil for a headache. That's as far as I go with it. I do not play around with it because I don't like anything altering my mood. I can't do it anymore, you know? But that's the degree that I have to take this thing because I've lost any leniency with playing with as the book says, alcohol in any form. And those forms for me are drugs as well, all kinds of drugs. So I don't know if I, you know, answered anything, but thanks for listening.
Thanks.
We got 15 minutes left. I want to hear from this guy. Pat, you want to come up and share a little bit on painkiller medication? I bet you got some experience with that. Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks. I remember that time. I was around when I was here when Chris had that horrible accident. That was a nightmare, and I watched you suffer through that. That was brutal. And also, Kevin, you mentioned Kevin. I watched him. Oh my God, he had a pin through his leg. It was horrible. I mean, it was like
contraption.
Yeah, and. Remember we were coming around here, Pete, and he was, and I remember talking to Kevin, and boy, his faith in God and his, I really watched him. And I said, Kev, I said, how are you handling this? And he said, they got him on all kind of medication. And he says, the only thing that, he told me the story of what happened. He said, the only thing that really bothers me is that it kind of blocks my prayer and meditation.
The medication.
Yeah, I went, whoa. Because I'm such a coward. I can't take any kind of pain. I didn't have, by the grace of God, I was thinking about what I would do. You know, you always ask myself questions. You know, what would I do? You know, did I have that experience? Or, you know, I turned Alcoholics Anonymous into a big question. And have to answer it for myself, I couldn't have went through what you did, Chris, you know, but I know we all get our turn in a barrel. What's the choice to be? What would you do? What would I do? And you gave some really good instructions. I know, you know, I can't take any kind of mood-altering substance. There wasn't, if I have a little cold, you know, especially early on when I was new, there wasn't a cold tablet to be found in a 50-mile radius. I would just, and then I'd be taking it 3 months later, and my wife would say, you're still taking it? I'd be taking 7, 8 of them. I can't take any of that stuff. And so I had it was no big deal. I had eye surgery, 5, 6 years ago. And my wife took me up to, I don't even know where I was, Marstown or something. And they gave me a couple of, Percodans or Valiums or something. And I had me in the waiting room. By the time they prepped me up, they came out. I had the nurse. I was smooching it up with her. I was rubbing up on her. Come here. I had one nurse here. Give me a couple calls. I was looking for the party. I was waiting for the music to come on. But I get really stupid, you know. But, what I do know is that, when they kind of wheeled me into Fair Oaks, I was taking, about 40 Percodans a day and taking as much drugs as I can. And I had a real bad habit going on. And I can't, the power that has, my wife just broke her leg recently. And I took her to the doctors and all, and they're setting her ankle. And they said, the doctors today now, you walk in there, they just say, name your poison. What do you want? It wasn't like that 15 years ago. She came home with a prescription. And I never had so many, when the news got out that she broke, I never had so many visits from sponsees in my life. All of a sudden, guys were showing up. Hey, how you doing? How's your wife? I was like, what are you doing here? They knew there was a prescription in the house, And I got to tell you, I was teasing them. I was fooling around, shaking the bottle, And I got to tell you, that was on my, that, because she's an alcoholic, strict alcoholic, Irish Catholic guy. They don't know nothing about drugs, So, that prescription was on my mind for a couple of days. And, what happened was, it was the obsession. It kicked off the obsession, because I was always thinking where it was. And, I started praying and, I said, God, I said, you got to, this ain't funny no more. I got to get right with this. You got to relieve me of this. And I prayed on it and a couple of days. And the next thing I know, I forgot about it. It wasn't an issue. The obsession was lifted. And I experienced that not too long ago. And that was powerful because, there's a great debate when the obsession to use is lifted in here, Where is it? What step is it? And my experience is as soon as I am willing to consider that God could restore me and I start asking him to do that, the obsession to use is lifted. And that's been my experience. It was my experience 14 and a half years ago, and it was my experience just 30, 60 days ago. So that's something that came to me while you were talking. If, I don't fool around with any prescriptions. I don't fool around. I don't, faced with that, I'm a big sissy. I can't take any pain, but I definitely, I would pray that God would give me the faith and the courage to go through what I saw you go through, Chris, and definitely Kevin. I watched Kevin. Pray and ask God to take him through that time, and I would, I don't even touch it. I wouldn't even, you know, I wouldn't even handle it or fool around with it myself because it's so powerful. And when you ask the question, powerless, you know, powerless is powerless. I have to ask, but how powerless am I? You know, I have to really faced with that question. But no, I'm a big chicken. When it's my time, I'm gonna be a faith healer. I want God just to cure me because I can't take no pain. But that's all I got. I ain't got too much. So thanks for letting me share, Chris.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.